Hey everyone, my name is Nathan Klayberg. I'm a VP here at MLG Capital and here with our CEO, Tim Wallen. I'm going to do some questions and answers on what's going on in private real estate today and see if Tim can share some of his wisdom that he's gained over the last 35 years. So welcome, Tim.
Hey, Nathan. Good to be with you.
Well, I think the main question I want to ask you today, Tim, is, interest rates are up and people can now invest in a treasury at 3 or 4%. And I think the question people are asking us right now is why invest in private real estate when you don't have as much liquidity and you're still getting cash flow in the 4% range?
So just for everybody's benefit, appreciate the question, Nathan. I know in my younger days, I was a tax manager with Pricewaterhouse, so I specialized in paying as few taxes as possible, and especially in the real estate space overall. So been doing this for 35 years and seen lots of cycles in varying degrees. And first of all, when you think about making money in life and on your investments, you have to think about risk. You got to think about income taxes. And certainly there's a place for U.S. Treasury. There's a place for investing in private real estate. So again, each person's got an individual situation. They have to make that decision on what risks they're willing to take, how much liquidity they need, what their income tax picture looks like. But so I'll do some generalization here. Again, you still have to take it back to your individual picture and talk to your advisors as you make these decisions. But first of all, when you think about U.S. Treasuries, you make 4%, but you're also paying ordinary tax rates. So if you make 4% and you're at the highest tax rates, roughly 50%, you're netting 2 after tax, right? Let's juxtapose that to private real estate investing. And we have a history of producing higher returns, but we're saying to our marketplace right now that we're targeting 11 to 13% type all-in returns to folks, maybe up to 15%. But let's say we hit 12% rate of return for folks. Now, with the way we structured our deals, we're very proactive about managing income tax bills. And we would expect that your tax rate should be closer to 25% on your real estate stuff with us, not the 45 or 50% type levels. So if you take 25% of 12%, you pay roughly 3% in taxes. So you'll net 9% after tax. So U.S. Treasuries earning roughly 2% net after tax for many people, and private real estate, 9% after tax. So I call that the cost of liquidity, the cost of managing risk. So you're really giving up 7% per year to offset the benefits that private real estate can bring versus investing in U.S. Treasuries, but obviously a whole different risk level. And we'll talk about risk next, but if you think about, I call it the liquidity cost, the cost of being liquid and overall. And if you think about the power of compounding, if you earn money at 9% per year under the rule of 72, your money will double every 8 years. You take 72 divided by 9. So every 8 years, you will double your equity. At 2% per year, it'll take 36 years for your money to double. So if you fast forward 8 years in time, $1 million investment doubles net after tax in 8 years. So you get $2 million 8 years from now, net after tax, if you hit the 12% return and give 25% to the government, 9% net, 2% per year times 8 years is roughly 16%. There's a little bit of compounding. So maybe you end up with $1,180,000, something like that. So you're basically giving up over $800,000 over the next 8 years on your $1 million to have that safety of U.S. Treasuries and liquidity that U.S. Treasuries give you. So I call it the liquidity cost. Are you willing to give that up? Now, we're going to need to talk risk here next, but from an investment perspective, that's what you're giving up when you have that safety of U.S. Treasury. And for some people, that's the right decision, right? So you have to look at your individual decision and make that call. Is it appropriate for you? Does it make sense for you, overall? Now I'm going to shift gears to risk. Obviously, U.S. Treasuries are risk, effectively risk-free, right? Other than Well, they're basically the government's going to pay you back on that investment. You can cash in tomorrow, so you got super liquid, super safe, right? And for some folks, that's the right call. You know, private real estate, we do try to manage risk. You know, our funds, we typically have 25 to 30 investments in them. So, you have a fair amount of diversification. And we also target lower leverage than most folks. We're targeting 60 to 65% debt. And then we also look to typically fix our loan, our interest rates for the term that we expect to hold an asset. So if we're going to own an asset for 7-8 years, we're going to do longer term fixed rate financing. If we're going to own an asset for 3 years, we'll do something that's more like a 3-year floating rate type of debt or 3-year fixed rate debt to match that risk. So we do a lot to manage risk. Most of the people who give us their money, they're not looking to roll the dice. I'm heavily invested in our funds. I don't want to roll the dice. I don't want to lose my money either. So preservation of capital is very important to us. And when we look at our investments, we think we do a very good job managing risk. Can we control what happens? Absolutely no. But we have 35 years of history of performing for people and managing risk. And we're very motivated and very focused on managing risk and what we do. It's not without risk though, okay? So it's different than the risk there. But you have to decide as an individual, is giving up on $1 million over the next 8 years worth $800,000 to you? Meaning that you'd be at 2 million net of tax versus being a little under 1.2 million investing in US treasuries net of tax. So that's a personal decision you have to make. So that's the high level stuff. Power compounding is real. Compounding at 9% versus 2% is a really impactful thing. I think Albert Einstein said one of the 8th wonders of the world is the power of compounding. So anyways, think about that as you make a decision. Talk to your advisors, be wise, do what's appropriate for you, but understand the cost that you're and the thing you're giving up when you make that decision.
Yeah, that's really great insight, Tim. Appreciate you sharing that. One of the critical assumptions you're making in that whole thesis is that we can continue to produce about a 12% rate of return for investors pre-tax within our funds. You know, there's a lot of headlines right now, higher interest rates, we're coming off a kind of a bull run in investing in private real estate. Do you still think that that type of return is achievable going forward? And if so, what gives you conviction in that belief?
First of all, you have to be disciplined in your underwriting. You know, we talk about our investments, doing investments where we believe they're smart investments. We define smart as we're making assumptions that we think are believable and they're achievable. Right? So believable, achievable assumptions overall. And then we also have an incredible amount of deal flow coming at us. Because we have our JV equity strategy, because we proactively invest with the real estate operators, as well as what we find on our own, about half of what we do are what we call JV equity deals. We call it our dual sourcing strategy. We see roughly 60, 80, 100 deals a month from other sponsors. We're looking to invest in one or two of those. So we got a critical selection process that we go through, identifying deals that we think the assumptions are believable and achievable, and the risk return balances are very much in order. So overall in the market right now, so our strategy of deal sourcing is critical to our historical performance for the last 35 years. Nothing is changing here at MLG. Our disciplines are not changing. I believe you need to buy in all cycles because there's opportunity in every cycle. And now the opportunity varies and the assumptions you have to make. You just got to be real about the assumptions you're making at that particular point in time because things change over time and you have to adjust the way you assume things in doing your math and underwriting. So today, looking at apartments, you know, we have a housing crisis in our country. We've not been producing enough housing, single family, multifamily housing, to meet the overall household formation, population growth type numbers in our country. And that's why we hit peak occupancy numbers recently, last year in the 96% range. Now we expect some of it to fall off with the possible recession, but nothing major. There's no major imbalances in the housing market right now. In my career in 35 years, the only times that we've had major disruption and major challenges in investing is coming out of the Reagan tax years back in the mid 80s when we put the passive loss rules in place. There was a lot of real estate that was being built and was being built for tax reasons, income tax reasons, not for economic reasons. And so when they changed the laws retroactively and created the passive loss rules, you had this monster supply of real estate that was created, not because there was demand for it. A lot of supply was created because of income tax benefits, okay? And so when they changed the rules, you had this monster overhang of excess supply versus demand, and prices fall, right? Basic economics. Real estate as far as about basics of economics, supply versus demand. So mid-80s, major tax policy thing caused, I believe, the major supply-demand imbalance in mid-80s. In the 2008, 2009 recession, we had a little bit of a different thing. It's really started, the problem started in the single family market, where we had way too many single family homes being built. There was a monster supply creation, and it started from the government policy of all the no doc, low doc loan period, where people buy 3-4 homes. As long as you had a down payment, you didn't even have to have the income to make the payments. As long as you had the down payment, you could buy 3-4 homes. So there's artificial demand created for single family, which ballooned up the supply of single family homes. And then the government realized, oh my gosh, people can't make all these payments and we have problems. And then they stopped the no-doc, low-doc policies, but they had created all this excess supply in single family. Now, the people that were being pulled out of multifamily into single family, they really couldn't afford it. So it created softness in multifamily in the early 2000s. But ultimately, that excess supply in single family crushed the financial system of our country. We had the banking crisis, the Great Recession of 2008-9. So we had this monster supply and demand in single family that had a ripple effect to multifamily, a ripple effect to the banking industry, and causing the Great Recession. So in my career, it's 35 years. Those are the only two cycles where we had major challenges to work through in private real estate investing, caused really by government policy decisions. I see nothing like that in today's environment. This is a typical recession type environment. Caused by the really a Federal Reserve that had to get inflation in check. Real estate's done a great job. You know, real estate's done its workman horse effort in creating rent growth that creates value that offsets the effect of inflation. It's done a great job there. But there's nothing in our market right now where we have monster supply versus demand. There's no monster imbalance in housing. In fact, the risk is the other side. There is not enough supply overall that's been created. And going forward here, less supply is going to get built with higher interest rates, higher costs. The math of building new is more difficult. So the supply side is very much in control. Yes, there'll be some supply markets where in a submarket they build too much. I'm talking generalities across the whole country. There are markets where people built too much, but overall, supply demand story is very much intact for multifamily. So that's one major point of why now. Next major point is like bonds, you want to invest in bonds when interest rates are high and you expect them to go down, because when interest rates go down, the value of bonds go up. Private real estate has the same benefit. We have higher interest rate environment right now. The Federal Reserve's got $31 trillion of debt. 2% higher interest rates for the U.S. Treasuries is almost as much as the whole defense budget. I don't believe our government can afford higher interest rates in perpetuity because they borrow so much money overall. So likely when the Federal Reserve has got a target of having a 2% inflation rate, you are likely going to get close to that 2% inflation rate because the federal government really can't afford to have high rates running away from us. And frankly, our economy would struggle with higher rates overall. But likely in the future, rates will be lower, and likely see 10-year treasury down to the 2.25% to 3% range, depending on where we are in the economy, once we achieve the 2% inflation level overall. So today we're buying assets at this higher interest rate environment. We underwrite on our underwriting, and we're buying stuff at a certain cap rate based on that interest rate. When we're selling, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, we're underwriting that interest rates are still high. We are not assuming that rates are going back down, okay? And our math works. Our math shows that we can hit our 11, 12, 13, 14% type rates of return with reasonable assumptions that are believable and achievable. We're assuming interest rates stay high and cap rates stay high. Highly probable that when we're selling 5, 6, 7 years from now, that rates are going to be lower, cap rates are going to be lower, and we'll get better multiples on earnings when we sell, and we'll be able to beat our pro forma. Now, we can't promise that, but that's just my gut. That's my personal gut. But we're being conservative in our underwriting. We're assuming the interest rates stay where they are. So point one, apartments strong. The supply demand story is strong for multifamily. Two, likely deploying, we're deploying capital in this higher interest rate environment, but likely selling when rates are likely lower. And the last point I want to make is human error. Human error is always real. You got to always keep reminding people of that. And that's why you can, the number one reason why you can buy in all markets. We bought a deal recently in Tampa, paid $91 million for that deal off market. We didn't negotiate with anybody. It was an equity recap deal. We bought the institutional partner out. The existing sponsor got to stay in. They got to keep their fee income and all that kind of good stuff. So we got to negotiate a $91 million deal, and we didn't have to bid against or compete against anybody. Think about that. Why would somebody sell a $91 million deal off market? They would have had 30, 40 offers on the asset if it would have gone to the street. Now, probably would have sold for $100 million or more. So we got a nice discount because of the human error element, because someone chose to sell off market. So anyways, that's why we should still be investing today, Nathan. Sorry, I got a little long-winded there, but I get jazzed when people think that we shouldn't be investing still because they're missing and not understanding our markets.
Awesome, Tim. Thank you for sharing. That's all great information. Appreciate you sharing your 35 years of experience.
All right. Thanks, Nathan.